Welcome to the Barth Calderon Wealth Protector Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women Presidents Organization, Vistage, the Young Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
Hi, everybody. This is Paul Hitchcock, and welcome to Wealth Protector TV. Really excited to have Tom Mason here today, who's one of our top attorneys. Tom, welcome.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Yeah, and we're going to jump right into this. This is an important topic, talking about estate planning, children, minors, and the medical authorization forms. Tom, take us into that. What is that all about?
Well, think of it as that circumstance where you're looking for a caregiver that might not be a parent and you're considering being gone for more than maybe just an evening, a long weekend, any of those circumstances that might arise where parent is concerned with appointing someone to provide care for their children.
Is this the medical authorization forms? This is a component of a basic estate plan. Is that right?
I would certainly consider it to be, yes. We don't really think of minors with healthcare powers of attorney, but this is kind of a way to give consideration for their care needs when a parent or, let's say, a guardian is not available.
Meaning that if the parent or guardian can't care for the kid, maybe they get injured or, God forbid, worse, is this document what you're talking about that kicks in?
Yes. Correct.
Okay. And what goes in a document? I mean, what sort of focus do you have on the decision about that document and who you choose and what powers does it give to the person that's named in it?
Sure. I think the starting point in any of these types of considerations, whether it's us seeking a caregiver or for our children, is really to inform them of their children's health considerations, limitations, concerns that you have just as a normal parent, especially allergies, things that they might be sensitive to. Food sensitivity is certainly something that's become paramount. I think it's making sure that whomever you choose, and oftentimes in these kinds of circumstances, it's not like you're, yes, you will evaluate, let's say, caregivers or, shall we say, babysitters. And,
right.
Those are the kinds of circumstances where you've maybe necessarily evaluated them, but I think it's important for those temporary caregivers to also have a great awareness of what our children need in terms of potential medical care.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think a lot of parents think about this when it comes to estate planning. You know, they're thinking about, oh, I'm going to pass away. It's all about dying. But estate planning, and this component of it is not about dying. It's about things that can happen while you're alive. And Tom, does it also go into, I mean, if the parents can't make decisions, the kids are minors, let's say they're in third, fourth grade or younger. Does this give the caregiver, the person, the authority to take care of the kids? And does it go into depth like that?
Yes, it will. Essentially the most, should we say, most direct authorization has to be typically as it relates to medical records or medical authorizations. We are always concerned about HIPAA compliance, which is certainly something we think of as adults, and it has a specific reference that gives authority to that temporary caregiver to basically have access to those records. It might even go as far as to make a declaration to say having access to school records or the ability to assign, let's say, a permission slip or an overnight trip authorization.
Right.
Any of those things that you might do as a parent, you want to be able to position this temporary caregiver as someone who could exercise that authority. And probably state to state, it's going to vary a little bit as to whether or not you might give consideration to having the document notarized. But for the most part, it's something that you can sign and have a fairly a great comfort level as to its effectiveness. It's something that unfortunately we don't think about until we're typically stepping out the door, we're on our way, and all of a sudden it's like, well, wait a second, if something were to happen to us short of death, where we can no longer provide those types of instructions, we need to make sure that short of going through the guardianship process, we have somebody who can step in and do that for them.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you, what is the worst case scenario here? You know, they don't have it in place, something happens. Walk me through that a little bit. What would go on?
Well, I think that from the medical provider's perspective, let's say an emergency room, if there are life-threatening conditions, there is implied consent. So they will treat minors as well as adults in those circumstances, even if you can't participate in your care. Okay. Where this really comes into play might be a circumstance that's kind of in our caught our attention, especially in the last 5 to 10 years, is maybe a concussion protocol. So one of the issues is they may need some type of care, they might need a scan, they might need something that rises to above that normal level, but it's not life-threatening at the moment. So therefore, that caregiver is going to be in a position to both interact with the physician and make a determination as to maybe a path of treatment, much less just maybe treating the outright pain with maybe not over-the-counter pain medication, but something that needs a prescription. Right. So it's really those kinds of circumstances. Worst case is short of life-threatening issues. Right. So it really arises to anything that's prior to that. So when we think about like car accidents and the riding with other people, it's really not for that circumstance where there might be, you know, that EMT immediate attention, because obviously most people can't be consulted in that circumstance.
Right.
But it's, you know, they go to the emergency room and all of a sudden it's not a situation where they're bleeding to death or other considerations that need immediate care. Now it's how does the doctor engage, because the minor is not in a position to make those kinds of decisions.
So, well, you mentioned guardianship, and I've heard, you know, that's not a scenario that you want to go down, you know, but if something happens and, you know, the hospital's doctors can't figure out who's in, you know, what's going on with the kids, then do the court step in? I mean, is there guardianship? I mean, what happens longer term in that scenario?
I think in the event, let's say no authority has been given, I think in many cases, what they've kind of done is maybe moved up the family hierarchy, consulted grandparents potentially, or other next of kin to potentially get direction. But you're right on point that ultimately what you have to move to would be a more formal guardianship declaration. And then oftentimes, and this is really one of the last concerns of where you do wills, is really naming or nominating a guardianship, someone to fulfill that position for your minor children. And so oftentimes the authorities, whether it be the courts or attorneys, will look to those documents for guidance as to who you've selected to be that individual. And so unfortunately, yes, then it becomes more of a formal process whereby they may be assessing your incapacity or unfortunately maybe your death and having to move to a position where they have to appoint a guardian. And oftentimes I think we kind of started talking about where most considerations are, and we talk about trust for estate planning,
right,
and financial powers of attorney, and the focus typically is on dollars. Right. Providing for their care, paying for their future needs. This really is one of those circumstances where you're separating financial needs from health needs.
Right.
And oftentimes we have to be in concert with the probate courts, because they're really the ones that have authority if we were to move to a guardianship setting.
So when you're meeting with a family and you're putting together an estate plan for the first time, this is one of the issues that you cover, is caring for the kids and all that goes into it?
Correct. And it oftentimes, one of the first questions I might pose or ask is kind of the immediacy of need relative to the estate plan, timing, trips. You know, we might often focus on collecting information about their assets and where their money sits, but really it's asking the parents, you know, do you have travel plans, or what's prompting the motivation to pursue the estate plan? Because necessarily we can do this kind of minor medical authorization in a very prompt manner. It's a very simplified document, typically one page. The thing that we usually ask the parents also to provide in support of that would be any healthcare policy documentation. So their insurance card, at a minimum, like a group number and the insured's number or name, so that we can at least in those cases provide that kind of information if necessary when they're getting care.
Okay. And I always think about when you're going through estate planning and issues like this, the documents may be standard, and there may be some uniformity with the documents, but really where the expertise comes in is dealing with a person like you, where, you're a good listener, you're asking the right questions, you're thinking things through, and you become, an advocate and a resource for the family. Would you say that's a fair statement?
Very much so. You really have to have a connection. And this is where the family and the family lawyer really comes into play, because you really are attentive to not only the financial needs that might be mapped out in a trust of the will type of setting, but also giving thought to minor children, especially when they're present.
Yeah. And it's interesting, Tom, because as we're talking here, I know I'm thinking to myself, yeah, you got to have someone to lean on, because life is not static, life changes. And, with the pandemic that we've all experienced, I know there was, issues coming up with minor kids that were away at college and got into issues, got COVID. I know one case came through the firm where a kid got COVID and isolated at school, and they wouldn't talk to the parents because there were no legal documents in place. Parents were pulling their hair out. You don't think about these things, but it really shook people, like, okay, I better do this. I better get on top of this,
Well, I think it's kind of interesting. We give consideration to this when we do permission slips, oftentimes with school-related trips, even in maybe even more summer camp settings where we're sending them to more of an extended stay, maybe a week, 10 days, those types of things. And I guarantee you that part of the enrollment packet includes, what are they allergic to? What are current meds they're on? Who's their current treating physician? What's the contact information? All of that information gets gathered.
Right.
What this kind of discussion and focus really is on is to say that comes up a lot more frequently than you realize. And we kind of mentioned prior the babysitting situation. I mean, how often do you think about that when you're just going to go out and be gone for a couple hours to go to dinner?
Right.
It's just not something that's on the tip of your conscience, at the point in which, hey, we're going to go to dinner. Let's call the babysitter. It's done last minute. We want to get out for a Friday. It's still important to give consideration to at least have this plan in place. And like I said, it's a very simple document. It's a one pager. Couldn't be simpler from a lawyer's perspective.
I had to smile when you were talking about this permission slips. I know you and I have talked, offline about kids, but I've got the four kids, and those permission slips, I must have signed a million of them, but they put them in front of my face at the last minute. They could have been going to Siberia. Okay, whatever. I signed the thing. Yeah, sure. It's with school, wherever. Who knows? I didn't know half the time where they were going,
Right.
Oh, funny.
Right. And it's, those are those circumstances where we trust, because typically it's going to be the teacher that's appointed when they're off site like that. And hopefully that is somebody we've met and we have some experience with, and in these kinds of situations, you really have to trust that you arm them with enough information. And oftentimes that's what this is designed to do. And I think, interestingly enough, special needs children, this is something that's top of mind. They have more immediate considerations, whether it's in a transport setting or an offsite setting. They have to be very cognizant of those kinds of needs. There's no reason why we can't also be in a position where this is top of mind for all of our kids, because we want to be the decision maker. We want to, and when I say that by extension in these kinds of situations, because we've armed somebody with the authority to be able to act. And that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, Tom, great information. Love having you on here. I want to thank everybody for being here. I always mention on our show that you got questions that come up around your own planning, wherever you're watching this video, because we stream these videos everywhere, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, blogs. There's going to be a way around the video to get one-on-one with Tom to get input on your own situation. So don't hesitate to get a complimentary assessment with Tom. You'll love it. Whatever your issue is going on, small, medium, or large, we're here to help. Tom, thanks so much. Going to have you back soon. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Paul, very much.
All right.